You're listening to L.I. in the A.M. with Jay Oliver. I'm Tom Shalero sitting in for Jay Oliver. L.I. news time is 7:35. And what does that mean? It's time for New York State Assemblyman Joe DeStefano. Great to have him on the program. I have a lot of questions for him. He's a good friend of L.I. News Radio. He's been on my program many, many times. Joe, how are you? How you been?
Greetings from Albany.
Now, that's there right. That's right. That's right. You guys are in session. Yeah, I got a good question. I got a good question for you, Joe. Again, Joe's a New York State Assemblyman up there in Albany, just doing so many different things. They were working on this budget. I heard they were there Saturday and Sunday just a couple of weeks ago. They got the budget done. So the governor was down here. I want to know what the scuttlebug is. The governor was down here. She was over at the Bola Market in Lindenhurst, the Lindenhurst Bola Market, and she met with the president, Harry Singh. And the reason she was there, because they were showing her videos and all sorts of camera photos of the retail theft people. You know, they're out there. They're stealing like crazy. They're going into the different stores. And she came out with a 5-point program to increase penalties for assaulting retail workers, more money for small businesses to buy cameras, allowing prosecutors to combine thefts when people steal from different stores, and again, a few other things that to me were kind of somewhat incidental. Now, if she puts this before the legislature, folks like you, again, Joe DeStefano on the program right now, will have to vote for it. But Joe, what's missing here? I got a little problem with this. What's missing with this?
Probably too little, too late. The barn door is open, and you know these little fixes. You know they're trying to let the people know that they're trying to do something. What's actually happening is the more people that do the retail theft, they're putting the small businesses out of business.
Right.
You know, I go around my community and I talk to people and they're saying, we just can't keep up with it. You know, no prosecution. We still go back to the old bail reform laws where nothing really happens to these people. Yeah, they put these little twinges in there, you know, to save face, I guess. But in reality, is that really going to happen? Are they really going to prosecute, you know, people who just go in and steal little things here and there? They're looking for the people that are dealing with, you know, $1,000 thefts or, you know, radios or guitars or, you know, whatever's big, that's what they're going for. And they're not looking at the mom and pop shops that survive on a daily basis with the money that are being walking out the door with the little things that are being stolen. And that's more of a, there's more little things stolen than bigger things.
Yeah, I'm concerned about what the governor said, and not just the governor, but the speaker of the New York State Assembly, Carl Hastie. She said that that a drop in recidivism due to change, there's been a drop in recidivism, people repeating their crimes ever since the bail laws were passed. So she's saying, I'm not really going to touch the bail laws because it's stopped repeat offenders. And Carl Hastie, on the other, said that increased penalties don't reduce crime. And there are people, particularly my listenership, and particularly listenership, I believe, here on Long Island, I think Long Island residents, they're not buying that, Joe. I mean, how does your conference, the Republican conference in the state assembly, how do you deal with that? I mean, common sense would tell you that if you give people pretrial detention after they've been arrested 15 times, that they are not going to repeat, because then they possibly will go to jail and so on, as opposed to abscond and not come to a court hearing. And on the other hand, Carl Hastie says, well, increasing penalties doesn't work. Well, if you put people in jail, they're probably not 100% going to commit crimes while they are locked up. How does one deal with that? I know your conference is pretty steadfast on this. You don't see it that way, but how do you deal with that, Joe DeStefano?
Well, it's nonsense, number one. Me, who worked in a jail for 27 years, I can tell you that they don't believe it. And I think the biggest problem in any government, whether it be state, federal, or anything else, town maybe even, is that they really never have the stakeholders at a meeting. They never put the people that actually enforce these things at the table. You know, when I was a union leader back and before I became an assemblyman, we used to interview, you know, people that wanted to run for office, and I always used to ask them, I said, how many times have you ever gone to the facility to see what it is that people do before you make up these laws? And the answer was, no, I've never been there. And that's the same thing that's going on. They never have the stakeholders at the table to discuss what it is that can be done to prevent these things from happening and what they feel And, you know, and that goes back to the bail laws again. You know, the DAs, the law enforcement officials, you know, the chiefs of police, the sheriffs, none of them, they never sat there and spoke to them and tell them what they believe, being that they work in the field. They see what goes on every day. They know how to control it, but they never ask for their opinion. Those who make laws are not always the best people suited to make the decisions that is, and what the speaker said was absolutely not true. Again, we used to, when I worked in the jail, we used to count on the same people coming in all the time, whether it was winter or summer,
right.
You know, three meals a day. They knew that they were coming in, and, you know, we knew that who they were, and that's absolutely not true. Recidivism does not stop as the punishment gets worse. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
You know, in a more perfect world, they might do better, and this sounds, of course, very naive of me, but indulge me for a moment, to look at the resumes of people we have in Albany, the people in the New York State Assembly, people in New York State Senate. Forget R&D, and let's say they come up with you, Joe DiStefano. They see that you have this experience as a professional, criminal justice professional working in the jails. You think they might ask you what could work? How do we reduce crime instead of saying ridiculous statements like increasing penalties doesn't reduce crime, or that bail reform has reduced recidivism and is keeping the bad people good? And you and I could both really laugh at that, except if it wasn't too sad, because it also increases a new level of victimization and so on. You think they might do that? Is there any way that people could start relying on the expertise that we have as opposed to party labels?
Well, the thing, you know, this is my sixth year. I can't believe it's been 6 years. I remember being on your show when you were running for office back in 2018.
I remember that, too. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
And unfortunately, the mindset here is there's a lot of pandering that goes on. You know, if you're in the leadership, you listen to the people that are going to influence the vote. And we all know, you know, based on the numbers, there's a big chunk of the Democratic Party comes from New York City, obviously, and they kind of push the envelope. And, you know, they're the ones that really don't believe that people should be, they're better off protecting the criminals more than the victims. And that's been seen time and time again, where, you know, we look at bills where, you know, they're protecting the person who actually did the crime more than they protect the victim. And that's unfortunate, because in Albany, it's about numbers, and they need to make sure that they get to a certain number. So the leadership, you know, they pander to the crowd that they need to pander to make sure that they have the numbers to get these bills passed. And you're right. They never go to someone who knows something about plumbing and ask them, what do you think about, you know, fixing this pipe or something like that? They just decide this is the way it is. You know, we're going to fix it this way, whether you know what you're talking about or not. It doesn't matter. And that's unfortunate, because a lot of people here make decisions that have no idea what they're talking about. And that's unfortunate for the rest of the state.
Yeah. Now, we just saw a budget that was approved, and you guys were working so hard about that. As you know, on Thursdays, I have my Albany report. Assemblyman Doug Smith is involved, and a certain Senator Dean Murray. And you've been involved, giving us information and so on. The budget's now passed, a little over 3.5 weeks late, something like that. You're now back up there. What is now the issues that you folks are taking up? Is it still budgetary items, or how to spend the money that you approved? Is there other items that could possibly deal with the 175,000 plus migrants that are here that need food, shelter, housing? I understand part of that $2.4 billion went to a debit card. I found that almost outrageous, getting a $1,000 a month debit card. I heard that. What are the issues right now, other than now that the budget is passed?
Well, now it's implementation. You know, now, you know, the school aid that's going to be given out. Now the school districts can go do their budgets, because the vote's coming up in a couple of weeks. What I find absolutely appalling is that, you know, in that budget, $2.4 billion is going to the migrant crisis. And, you know, the people who actually pay taxes and send their kids to school, a lot of districts got cut. And that, to me, is appalling, how we can, you know, support the migrant situation by taking it out of the taxpayer's pocket while their kids are losing programs. Some school districts are losing teachers. And to me, that is just the reverse of what should be happening. We should be, you know, more money to the people who educate our kids and school districts, you know, my school district, Patchogue Medford, I saw the superintendent the other night, and, you know, she was a little upset because her budget got cut $100,000 from the proposed budget in January that the governor put out. And some of my school districts did better, and some of them did worse. Now, the bottom line is that how do you propose a budget for your district if you don't know what the numbers are? And, yes, they did better in some school districts, but there were some that weren't. Now, that foundation aid has to be changed. It has to be reconfigured or something. But to your point about what's going to happen, we have 5 weeks left in session. And, you know, maybe more depending on how things go at the end. But the bottom line is there's a lot of bills still out there. Now, you know, just to give you a perspective, I have 6 committees that I'm on in the assembly. This week, none of them are meeting, which to me is ultimately ridiculous because there's got to be something going on in governmental employees, in transportation, in labor, in aging, in corrections. There's got to be something going on in any one of those committees to present it to the floor for a vote. So I don't know who's, you know, I know who's doing it. You know, the majority is putting these bills together and putting them out there. This week, we have only 22 new bills that are being introduced in a 3-day work week, which to me is like we should be really pushing more. And we got to get away from, you know, 1 or 2 hour sessions. We got to put a day in. You know, anybody who knows how and pays attention to how the assembly works, you know, our session's supposed to start at 2 o'clock. Yeah, it doesn't start until maybe 3:30. And then we'll be there for an hour, hour and a half, and we'll call it a day. That if this was the private sector, none of these people would be working. None of them. Because it's ridiculous. I did an 8-hour day, and a lot of times I did a 16-hour day, and that was my day of work. To come in and do 2 or 3 hours a day is really ridiculous, and the taxpayers are not getting their money's worth from us. And not because we don't want to be there. Not because we don't want to be there. The other side runs it, so that's what we deal with.
Yeah, I'm glad you're reporting this because people need to know this, and the fact that that has certainly gotten to you and trying to push the legislature to work hard and so on. Any legislation that got, I think Dean Murray refers to it as the big ugly or something like that. Are there things that gotten through in the budget that is going to be a big surprise to the people back home, back here on Long Island?
Not really. I think that, you know, there was a little ugly, I guess, if you want to call it that. The thing is that we are anticipating at the end of session, because there's a lot of people not happy about the outcome of the budget, and they're still waiting for some really serious bills that they're pursuing to be part of the end of session big ugly, if you wish. But there were some good things. I'm not going to throw, you know, the baby out with the bathwater. There were some things that happened in the budget. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, Tier 6 reform. That's, you know, I obviously being a labor guy my whole life, it's not perfect. It's not the end all, you know, in having conversations with the governor and the comptroller, you know, if you changed everybody, you gave them peer equity right away, we would have no more pension system. And I know you enjoy your pension check at the end of the month and so do I and like that. But the bottom line is that you got to phase this stuff in. And I believe that, you know, we need to fix it better. But the thing is that everybody knows that has anything to do with labor and unions knows that more than 50% of the state retirement system is in Tier 6. And, you know, sooner or later, that's going to have a major effect on, you know, pension checks down the road, because these people are going to work basically until they die. And that's not the right way we should be handling a pension system. You know, you work hard for 30 years and sometimes more. To look forward to the rest of your life, and to sit there and say, I'm going to work until basically I'm ready for the grave, is not the right way to handle a retirement system. So I have talked to the comptroller about that.
Yeah. Again, we just have a few more minutes left. There was a big press conference up at the beginning of the session, January 7th or January 8th, when you guys first got into session, and the district attorneys were all there, the police officers were there, the unions were there, and so on. The police unions were there. And they were looking at a whole policy change towards law enforcement, towards more funding of police officers, change in laws, bail reform, and so on. Ray Tierney was instrumental in putting that press conference together. You were there speaking and so on. Any of that, and I almost hate to ask that, but as we're approaching 5 weeks left in the session, has any of that come to fruition or moved in the right direction? Because it just seemed to have the support of all the good folks, our great members of the assembly in the state senate. Again, I included you in that. You are supported very much by our police departments and so on. Have you seen anything that was positive that came from that 4 or 5 months ago?
Not really. When bills come up that are in support of law enforcement, generally speaking, it's very lukewarm at best. There are some moderates that are out there that will support it, but as a whole, no. And again, I'll go back to my statement earlier by saying that they never talk to the stakeholders. They never bring them to the table to find. Now, I'm not saying there should be one sided or the other. I'm saying there's got to be a happy medium somewhere where you get more judicial discretion, you get more accountability, you get more prosecuting of the bad guys. This is what we're talking about, prosecuting bad guys. We're not talking about people that are following the law and doing what's right. We're talking about people who are doing things and victimizing the public. Those are the people. I mean, you know, go back to the time where the guy robbed five times, and he keeps telling everybody, I can't believe they let me out. I mean, think about it. They're even puzzled that this is so liberal and they let these people go without enforcing any laws and giving. I think the bottom line is they need to get the judicial system straightened out and getting more judicial discretion. I think if you give them that platform and you give the DAs more discretion about what to prosecute and what not to prosecute. Listen, again, I worked in the jail for a long time. And when people came in for $100 bail, we all looked at each other and like, why are they bringing this guy to jail for $100? I mean, you should just, you know, give him a field appearance ticket and let him go. And those are the things that what bail reform was trying to accomplish, but it just absolutely went too far. And then not bringing it back to the middle where it probably belongs, not one extreme or the other. And again, I'm always going to fight for that. I'm always going to try and bring them to the table. Being the ranking member of governmental employees, I do have a voice with the committee. We do get things done, but we do it as a state. We don't do it, you know, for Suffolk County where I live. And I know Ray Tierney is a great friend and a great district attorney, and I know that he's waiting for us to come up with something that helps him do his job, because in reality, it's the people we protect. It's really bizarre how we don't protect those who protect us. It amazes me. And when you're going back, I don't know how much time I got left, but when you go back to the time saying that, the crime is down, that's not true. It's just that a lot of them are not being reported. A lot of those small crimes are not being reported because they're not going through the system. They're just being let go right from there. A field appearance ticket right at the spot of the foul, and they're done. And it never really gets reported to the bureau that does statistics. So, unfortunately.
Yeah, again. Now, you explained that extremely well. And again, it's going to be a topic of discussion as we start to go further or towards the end of the legislative session and then see what the final result is and so on. Yeah, just a minute or two left. You're always out there. You're great community minded. The civics love you. The school boards love you. The residents do. You do an extremely great job. What are the folks saying? What would you say is the number one issue in your district as we approach a very, very important election year, which, by the way, you'll be one of the candidates running for re-election?
The economy. I mean, I'm looking around at gas prices. They steadily are increasing now. There's always been a spike around Memorial Day, because the summer travel starts. But in reality, when you go to the food, you know, when you go to the supermarket, everything is so expensive. I had a hamburger and French fries for dinner. It was $16.
I know.
Having a hamburger, it was like $6. Now it's $15. People are spending more money on food, gas, oil. I got my oil the other day, $675 for 150 gallons of fuel.
Wow.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And there's no end in sight. This economy has to be turned over back the way it used to be. And if we continue on the path that we're going to just tax these people right out of our state, out of our town. I mean, I represent Brookhaven Town. I don't have 3-4 towns I represent. I represent Brookhaven Town, and I hear it everywhere I go. You know, the economy is killing people. They're not making more money. They're spending more, but their money is not going up as fast as inflation is taking it. And I know the numbers, you know, you can spend it any way you want. The percentage is down from where it was at its high, but it's never come down. The prices have never come down since inflation was at its peak about a year or two ago.
All right, let's hope that there's some sort of resolution, whether it's state legislative races, a congressional races, a presidential, that we all come together and make it easier for the folks, the forgotten middle class, as we say, and certainly the folks that you represent. Joe, thank you so much. Joe DiStefano, New York State Assemblyman, coming on the program this morning, getting up early. We appreciate what you're doing, and we'll talk to you again soon, my friend.
All right, Tom, great being with you. Have a great day.